We are delighted that Michael Rubin is back safe and sound in America, and we got a lot to ask him about regarding Afghanistan and Pakistan. Michael Rubin, who is resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, instructs our troops before they go over to these places, and we welcome you back, Michael.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You just penned a piece. What is going on? First of all, how was the trip, and what is going on with Karzai? Is he reaching out to the Taliban? What's happening?
The trip was, I mean, I learned a lot. There's a lot of good things going on in Afghanistan. Certainly flying in and first impressions are it's a lot more orderly, if you will, than even flying into Baghdad now. That said, politically, it's a mess, and the idea of negotiating with the Taliban is actually making things less settled, and there's a lot of anxiety in the air because of it.
Let me go right to this. Thank you for the brief responses. I got a zillion questions, but you elaborate when you want to. How much of this impetus for negotiating with the Taliban on the part of Karzai comes from worry about Americans and whether we'll be there, stay there?
A huge amount of that comes. When I didn't talk to the Americans at all when I was there. I wasn't hosted by the U.S. military or the embassy. When I was talking to people ranging from Karzai's former Minister of Intelligence to his close circle of advisors and so forth, people said, and there was real fear, that Karzai is holding out a deal or hoping to make a deal with the Taliban because he doesn't think the Americans are going to be there anymore. What that means in practice, people believe, is that Karzai is, if you will, collaborating with the Pakistanis to keep his power at the expense of our national security.
Repeat that. That the people you talk to, these are reliable people, said that he is reaching out to the Taliban because of uncertainty about the American presence being there next year, year after.
There are three points people brought up in this regard. Number one was that Karzai is trying to strike a deal with the Taliban, but a deal, when he's striking this deal, it's not based on the idea of preserving Afghanistan as a secure country. It's based on purely maintaining power because he does not believe that the Americans will be there. More worryingly, many of his advisors said that, A, he is very smart, but, B, when he is acting increasingly erratic and paranoid, it's not just a game and it's not just positioning to the public. He's not crazy, but he believes in many of the conspiracy theories that the United States is somehow selling him out to the Pakistanis, so he needs to make that deal.
What does that mean, selling him out to the Pakistanis? What does that mean? I haven't heard this.
Don't underestimate the antipathy between Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Okay.
Afghanistan and Pakistan have been fighting since even before Pakistan's independence. If I may, just very quickly,
sure.
In 1919, there was a war in which Afghanistan invaded what's now Pakistan. In 1947, when you had Pakistan's partition, India's partition and the independence of Pakistan, Afghanistan voted against letting Pakistan into the United Nations. Between 1951 and 1961, Afghanistan sent troops into Pakistan several times. They have a territorial dispute. Now, when the Clinton administration turns around, I'm sorry, when the Obama administration turns around and says, we are going to give Pakistan a seat at the table, we are going to run our aid and assistance through Pakistan, what Karzai and many U.S. allies in Afghanistan think is that the United States is selling Afghanistan out to Pakistan, and therefore, rather than cut a deal with the United States, they need to cut an even better deal with Pakistan, one that doesn't necessarily assure U.S. interests.
I got it. Boy, I got so many questions. I don't know where to begin. You said you were not there as the guest of the U.S. military. Can dumb question, I'll just say it. It's spontaneous. Can you get this message to the Obama administration? Can you get this message to General Petraeus? This would be a very bad deal.
I'm hoping over the next couple days to be able to get a couple things published. But the one important thing, look, if I may, let me just talk about history for a short second.
Yes.
History is more than a litany of names and dates. History is a narrative through which ordinary people interpret events. So while the British may promote their engagement with the Irish Republican Army as a model for reconciliation, and as General Petraeus may see his engagement with the Iraqi Sunni insurgents as a model, as an unbridled success, both narratives are as foreign in Afghanistan as sushi. What matters is what Afghan history is and how Afghans think. Now, this is where we run into a real problem, because as the Obama administration encourages dialogue with the Taliban, and make no mistake, they're encouraging it every day, it brings...
Is that a mistake?
Make no mistake that we...
No.
I mean,
No. Is it a mistake to encourage conversation with the Taliban?
It is, and this is the reason why. What most Afghans think about when they think of negotiation is what happened in the first Anglo-Afghan War back in 1842. Now, what you had there, just very, very briefly, was a British military occupation of Kabul in order to support a fairly weak ruler named Shah Shuja. And the British fought an insurgency against the former ruler, a guy named Dost Muhammad. Well, what happened is the British went into negotiations with Dost Muhammad and agreed to withdraw. And in 1842, 16,000 British men, women, and children left Kabul with assurances of free passage to Jalalabad. Only one survived. 15,999 were killed. And it's an example of insincere negotiations.
Where's this story told, by the way? I would love to read this story. What's the book I want to get? 16,001 survived? Wow.
Well, the book which you can read it in is Peter Hopkirk's The Great Game. But this is a situation, it was the worst British military defeat ever, at least until the Battle of Singapore 100 years later. Now, the reason this is important is right now, when we or Hamid Karzai are engaging the Taliban, Mullah Omar, the leader of the Taliban, has gotten up and said, "See, I am Dost Muhammad, Hamid Karzai is Shah Shuja," and that makes General Petraeus to be General Elphinstein, the military commander who led this disastrous withdrawal. Now, of course, that's not fair to General Petraeus.
Sure.
And it's not accurate, but perception is more important than reality. Now, even among our allies, if you go into Defense Minister Warduck's office, he has a picture of this retreat, of the one lone survivor stumbling into Jalalabad on a horse. This is the narrative we're up against, not about the Irish Republican Army and not about the surge in Iraq. And what we're doing is we're playing into the Taliban's propaganda hands by doing this, by rushing this engagement, which sounds good in Washington. It sounds great in Washington, but it's complete nonsense when you get to Kabul. And I even had, I met with a former head of the ISI in Pakistan, and he even said this whole thing of engagement is a joke.
Now, this naive listener here, me, maybe a few others, why does it sound like a good idea? It doesn't sound like a good idea at all to me to negotiate with the Taliban. They're the bad guys. Will they even let Karzai, you know, sustain himself, exist? I mean, why would we want to go to this effort, the effort we went to, the effort we're going to now, and give the country up to the Taliban? Why is that a good idea?
That's a good question. Now, there's two points here. Number one, what the Americans are thinking is two things. Number one, that the Taliban somehow represent the Pashtun. You had a big controversy there just a couple days ago when Richard Holbrooke, who's President Obama's special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, reacted to that Time magazine cover where an Afghan woman had her nose cut off by
the
Taliban,
and
saying this is just normal cultural practice. When I stopped by the foreign ministry, they were sending nasty emails to Richard Holbrooke for thinking that the Taliban represent Afghanistan and the Pashtun any more than Pol Pot represented the Cambodians when he conducted that genocide. That's number one. Number two is this idea, which I was hearing in Pakistan when I was talking to the ISI and former military guys as well as Islamists. They were saying, look, this engagement isn't going to work for two reasons. Number one, Hamid Karzai is engaging only those people he wants to engage. He's not really engaging the people that matter. And they said, number two, the Americans got it in their head that the Taliban are just in there for cynical reasons, perhaps for money. They don't understand the importance of the Islamist ideology, that some of these people can't be bought off. This is the one big difference between Afghanistan and the Taliban on one hand and Iraq and the Ba'athist insurgents on the other. The Ba'athists could be bought off. They weren't that ideological. Saddam, who they wanted power, and they could be bought off. In Afghanistan, it's about militant Islamism, and this is something which we shouldn't empower, and we shouldn't go into the narrative where they think they're on the verge of winning.
Yeah, we are getting, by the way, Michael, you're on fire this morning, getting requests from listeners to put this interview up on the website. It will be up right after the show. We got to keep you a while, all right?
Okay.
Can we? Because we, I know you're writing on this, but we have to keep you. You're getting a huge audience. Folks, if you want to talk to Michael Rubin, ask a question, 866-680-6464. You hear it here. I don't know where else you hear it. Let's go to a different end game and a different voice. I had Jake Tapper yesterday. I like Jake Tapper. He's the White House correspondent for ABC. I talked about this issue, how important foreign policy is to the president. He said it's very important. I said, what about the July deadline? Isn't that driving a lot of bad things? Back to my first question, Michael. And he said, the president can satisfy that. He made it clear through his own comments and Biden's comments just by taking out, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 men, and then you could replace them with other men. So they aren't really committed to getting out that quickly, your comment.
It's political smoke and mirrors. I would hope that if the president makes calculations based on national security alone, that he will continue in Afghanistan with the presence until the Taliban are defeated.
And say so. Isn't that important
This is where I would disagree a little bit with Jake.
Yeah, sure.
In that it is important for him to say so, but by opening Pandora's box, if you will, with this deadline in the first place,
yes,
no one is really going to believe President Obama until the deadline passes and we have the troops in the region.
But, Michael, you wait till the deadline passes. This guy's cozying up Karzai to Taliban now, and you got another 10 months before you get there. He could be in their lap by then.
You're absolutely right, and that's the tragedy of the situation, because we opened ourselves up to this unnecessarily. And I did hear from, including from one of Karzai's own advisors, who pointed out to me, look, Obama has never talked about victory. He's talked about managing
the
situation.
That's fair enough. Hold on, Michael. We're going to keep you a while. Okay. Give me the name of the book again.
The Great Game by Peter Hopkirk.
Do you recommend it as a good book?
Yeah, excellent.
All right, fine. And it tells this story. One guy hobbles in on a horse. Is that right?
That's correct.
Unbelievable. I've never heard this story. Well, live and learn. Morning in America. We'll be right back with Michael Rubin. Let's go to the hop. Let's go to the hop. Oh, baby. Let's go to the hop. Come on. Let's go. Do you want to dance and hold my hand? Tell me, baby, I'm your loving man. Oh, baby. Do you want to dance? You say the music has nothing to do with the substance. Yeah, well, I'm afraid this could be what Karzai is essentially singing to the Taliban. You want to dance? You want to hold hands? We're getting calls, and we invite more calls, 866-680-6464. Michael Rubin on fire this morning back from Afghanistan. Are you writing something that we can link to? When will it be up, Michael? Where?
Well, I need to get it accepted first, but I'll send you an email as soon as it gets accepted and it's up.
I'm confident it'll be accepted. Michael, does this have anything to do with what we're talking about? And if it doesn't, forget it. I had a news story here this morning. According to the Wall Street Journal, members of Pakistan's spy agencies are pressing Taliban field commanders to fight the U.S. and its allies in Afghanistan.
That has absolutely everything to do with what's going on. I met with Asad Durrani, who was the former head of the ISI, back between, I think it was around 1989 to
ISI is the Pakistani Intelligence Group, right?
Right. That's who we're talking about. He's an older guy, retired, but you never really retire from the establishment. But he was talking about it in terms of strict realism. He really criticized former Pakistani President Parvez Musharraf for telling George W. Bush right after 9/11 that Pakistan would do whatever it needed to take. He said that that opened up Pakistan to being exploited by the United States, and the only way, and he kept saying from a realist perspective, we can defend Pakistan is to keep the heat up on the United States.
Okay, I got it.
I'm not justifying what he said, but that's the point of view they're taking.
I got it. Let's go to Robert, always smart, in San Antonio. Robert, you're on with Michael Rubin.
I'd like to ask Michael Rubin, because he is the guy to ask. The reasons why you don't want to negotiate with terrorists like the Taliban is because of the way they conduct world warfare. They attack children and so forth. and you legitimize their type of warfare. Isn't that true, or can you give me that whole, the reasons why you don't want to negotiate with terrorists?
Well, it's hard to give you any more reasons than you just gave me, and you're absolutely right, and this is something I heard, a complaint I heard, for example, when I went up to Ahmad Shah Massoud's former hometown in the Panjshir Valley. You remember that he was the Northern Alliance leader that was killed just a day or two before the 9/11 attacks, and what people who knew him said was basically, why is it the Americans are supporting the enemies always rather than supporting their allies? Whenever anyone sets a bomb off, they said, that's the people who America talks to, that's the people who America tries to buy off, and then they forget about everyone else.
All right. Thanks, Robert. Nick in Philadelphia. We may need to keep you over the top of the hour. Can you do that, Michael? We got a
Certainly,
ton of calls.
Especially
Great.
Phone call from my hometown of Philadelphia.
Great. Okay, Nick, go ahead. Make it look good and sound good now, Nick, for Michael.
No pressure. just a quick question. I've read an article that says that Afghanistan is tribal clannish, and they were talking about the possibility of splitting up the government to give those groups more semi-autonomous power. Like states in a federal system or a confederacy. My first question is that the way it is on the ground? Second of all, would that be an improvement over the current government system? And third, even if those two are both true, in this environment, are we capable of making that pivot, or is the whole discussion irrelevant?
Can you great questions, all of them. Can you make these clans, these different groups, tribal groups, work together?
Yes and no. First of all, Afghanistan is much more tribal in the rural areas than in the cities. This is always the case. It was the case in Iraq as well. The problem where we're running into trouble right now is going back to what Robert Blackwell has said when he advocated a soft partition of Afghanistan, and what Richard Holbrooke said when he said that this was the cutting off noses was just normal pushtun practice, is this mistake that the Americans are making by assuming that just because almost all Taliban are Pushtun, that all Pushtun are Taliban. The first is true, the second is false. And so when we're talking about devolving control in Afghanistan, the mistake we're making is talking about devolving control and promoting the Taliban at the same time. That's the mistake. Now, the policy question coming up that we don't know about, Afghanistan has had two major elections for the president, and that was flawed, and that was flawed as well just a couple weeks ago. No one knows what's going to happen when it comes to the local district elections, and that really for Afghans will be the face of whatever local government or democracy they have.
What should the administration do right now in 1 minute, and then we'll go to break and keep you, you'll come back.
The administration, number one, has got to stop violating its red lines. If it's going to hold Karzai to account, it's got to hold him to account. That's number one. Number two, they cannot start negotiating with the Taliban. What that does when we're negotiating from a period of a position of weakness is simply encourage the Taliban and cause our allies to desert us.
When you say they, the U.S., but do we also tell Karzai he cannot negotiate with the Taliban?
We should discourage it. One barometer, which is just horrible right now, is that Karzai is actively purging all the pro-American Afghans around him. That's what we need to avoid.
All right, listen, Michael, this is great stuff. Hot off the plane, and Michael's on fire this morning. This is very, very important. I know we are consumed with domestic politics, jobs, the economy, as we should be, and we will give that plenty of time and attention in the next hour, but we're going to hold Michael over because of the demand of calls. People need to know this. The president is, first of all, the commander-in-chief. We had defense that from Jake Tapper that he takes it seriously. Michael Rubin, not seriously enough, or not in the ways that he should, perhaps. We'll be back. Stay with us. It's Morning in America.
Bill talks to the big names in the news each and every morning. This is Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
You've heard me talk about how great the Sleep Number is at creating an individualized sleep experience. And you get that just by selecting your Sleep Number setting. But did you know that even the shopping experience with the Sleep Number bed is designed just for you at a Sleep Number store? I want you to experience this truly individualized way to shop for a mattress and see my bed, the Sleep Number bed. I love my bed. I've loved it for years. My Sleep Number is 95 to 100. Mrs. Bennett's, well, I can't tell you that. You know, you won't find the Sleep Number bed in an ordinary mattress store, only at a Sleep Number store. So go in and find your Sleep Number today. Hurry in during the semi-annual sleep sale where you can get our most popular Sleep Number model at the lowest price ever. Plus, get free standard delivery on any bed only through October 17th. With almost 400 stores nationwide, there's a select comfort right around the corner. Find yours today by calling 1-800-339-1101. That number again is 1-800-339-1101.
You're listening to Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
I started having symptoms of menopause when I was 47 years old. The hot flashes and night sweats were almost unbearable. I gained 50 pounds, was irritable, emotional, just not myself. As a registered nurse, I was concerned about taking pharmaceutical hormone replacement therapies because there is a history of breast cancer in my family, plus all of the unknowns when you take drugs. So I tried Amberin. Within 2 weeks, the hot flashes stopped. Yes, they stopped. I have been working with Amberin for almost a year now. I've dropped so much weight. I'm no longer irritable. I sleep great, and I have a ton of energy. One of the most important aspects of this treatment is that there are no side effects. I highly recommend Amberin. Signed, Carol Richardson, RN, and very satisfied Amberin customer. For your free supply of Amberin, visit StopFlashes.com or call 800-417-1547. A limited number of free trials are available. Call 800-417-1547. That's 800-417-1547. 800-417-1547.
The sun's rising over America. Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Let's get rolling. Call 866-680-6464. Atlantic to Pacific, north to south, across the globe. It's Bill Bennett's Morning in America, live from the Public Philosophy Command Center in North Carolina and the Boulevard Studios. Bill Bennett.
We're staying with Michael Rubin because of the importance of the issue. There's nothing more important going on today that I can report to you about, that I can tell you about, with the possible exception of this ruling by the judge in the civilian trial of this terrorist, and we'll have more about that later. But to summarize, Michael Rubin just got back from Afghanistan. There are rumors that Karzai, prime minister there, wants to negotiate with the Taliban. Bad idea. Needs to be discouraged from doing that. A lot of this has to do with the fact that people expect American troops will withdraw next July. Another bad idea. We're wondering what to do about this. Let me just start, Michael, with an email we got from Jacksonville. Is there a plausible military way to, quote, prevail? And what does the military think about Karzai at this point? What do you think our senior command thinks of Karzai at this point?
I'm going to have to defer the second part of that question because I didn't talk to the U.S. military there.
Okay. I presume they would not think you'd win by negotiating with the Taliban.
I would presume not, although you've had General Petraeus talk about how negotiation can be part of a strategy. The question is whether our intelligence believes that the Taliban can be bought off or whether they're ideological. It seems perhaps that some people...
You were suggesting something of a disanalogy, though, here in Afghanistan, between Afghanistan and Iraq, in terms of kind of negotiating and who you can flip and so on.
Indeed. There most certainly is. They're not analogous. The reason is because the insurgents in Iraq were largely the Ba'athists, who we were able to bring to our side, if you will, with overwhelming force, while at the same time killing the al-Qaeda guys like Zarqawi and so forth. In the Taliban you have people like Gulbuddin Hekmatyar in the Islamic group, you have the Haqqani network, you have the Quetta Shore where Mullah Omar is. These guys are ideological. They can't be compromised with. And just one more point, just to illustrate this, 15 years ago, when we're talking about the Taliban, Do you remember who the Taliban representative was, where I think it was either at the time Warren Christopher or Madeleine Albright would pass messages to? It was Hamid Karzai. He was once in the Taliban, and so we can't discount this idea that he would once again go to work with these guys if he thought his job security depended on it.
I think that partly answers Dave and Nick's questions. You guys don't have to hang up if you want to hang in and press it further, but I want to go to Bill in Artesia, New Mexico. Yes, Bill.
Good morning, Dr. Bill. Good morning, Mr. Michael. It certainly has been a disturbing peek under the turbine, so to speak. It seems to me that a clever leader can always find a way to create a new paradigm. What move or what series of moves could the president make now that he's dug us into this hole to change the paradigm and get us on a positive strategy rather than this one that we're on? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Great question, Bill. Nicely put.
2 points. Number one, we've got to work with Afghanistan as Afghanistan. We've got to stop treating it as a proxy or, if you will, as subordinate to Pakistan. What many of the Afghan officials said is that we've also got to stop putting the brakes on the Afghans who want to take the fight to the Taliban. In every province but one, in every province but Panjshir, there is a Taliban presence. And the one thing that surprised me when I talked to Afghan intelligence officials was that in some of these provinces, including ones that I drove through, they know, the Afghans know, and the Americans know exactly who the Taliban support structure, who represents the Taliban support structure. But for the sake of a diplomatic settlement, we're taking a hands-off approach, and we're encouraging the Afghans to take a hands-off approach. Let's just say theoretically that negotiation with the Taliban would work. If you want to negotiate from a strong position, you don't suddenly tie your hands up militarily as you do it, and yet that's what we're doing.
Yeah, got it. Okay, Nick, go ahead, Nick. Let's press that point a little harder. Go ahead. Nick?
The thesis is that the regressives are a pretty secular lot. Is it really possible that they can understand a fundamentalist Islamic theology that's rooted in faith? Can they really grab onto that and understand what it means?
The progressives in our government is who he's talking about, Michael. Appreciate what motivates Taliban?
It's not just progressives. The biggest obstacle we're up against analytically is what's called projection, assuming that other people think just the way we do. We see it when Jimmy Carter goes to North Korea. We see it when Bill Clinton wants to shake hands with Mohammed Khatami. The fact of the matter is multiculturalism isn't about eating sushi and drinking a mojito at the same time. The fact of the matter is different people think very differently, and until we learn that lesson, we're constantly going to get ourselves in trouble.
Great. John is in Charlottesville. Go ahead, John. You're on with Michael Rubin.
Good morning, Dr. Bennett. Good morning, Dr. Rubin. Michael, you mentioned the narrative that the Taliban played from, which is the first Afghan war where they slaughtered that British army. But isn't there an alternative narrative of the second Afghan war where the British returned the next year without women and children, and they retook Kabul, and they kept it for the next 60 years because they came shooting?
It was a couple years later. Look, that's an excellent point. It was a couple years later. It was around 1878, and when they came back with massive retaliation. They really bombarded the heck out of Kabul, and the Afghans understood strength. That said, if you want to draw the analogy out further, in 1919, you had the third Anglo-Afghan War. This happened a year after World War I ended. The Afghans had radio, and they understood just how exhausted the British were, and they believed that that meant that the British were weak. And so what they did was they took their army, and they invaded India. They invaded what's now the Northwest Frontier Province in Pakistan. Now, the British weren't as weak as the Afghans believed at the time. And by the way, the Afghans called this third Anglo-Afghan War a jihad. They combined the religious aspects of it with the nationalist aspects of it. The British responded with airstrikes and took back the Northwest Frontier Province. This is the point, however, that if you're going to have any solution, any settlement, you're going to, perhaps there is a role for diplomacy, but you're going to have to couple it with hard military power, and it seems that that's what we're trying to take off the table. At least that's what our allies in Afghanistan believe we're doing.
Well, great. All right, John, I'm going to give you the response, because what I heard was, okay, how about the second? And then Michael said, okay, but how about the third? So we'll give you the answer, because I don't have the foggiest idea what you guys are talking about, but I'm learning a ton.
that's an excellent point. And I'm voting for putting the hard military action back on the table, coupled with diplomacy, and seeing if that gets us anywhere as opposed to what we're doing now, which is just wasting lives. We're spending lives for nothing.
Thank you, John. Michael, come out.
I agree with John. There's always a role. I mean, what military strategists talk about and what we teach in our military academies is what's called the dime paradigm, where every strategy has a diplomatic, an informational, a military, and an economic component. And for a cohesive and coherent strategy, we should have all four of these components. I agree with John. You do want, perhaps at some point, to have a diplomatic outlet for some of these people. But at the same time, you can't do it from a position of weakness. And so perhaps then the second Anglo-Afghan war narrative is one that President Obama should heed, where you do negotiate only and always from a position of strength. Got so I don't think John and I disagree with each other.
All right. May I just pat on the back a little bit? I mean, how about they talk about talk radio? How about this audience, Michael, with these questions, huh?
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's I'm so proud of them, and I learned so much. You guys know so much. And Michael, last question. Joseph in Bristol, Pennsylvania. Make it quick, Joseph, please.
Yes, I can. How are you, Michael? Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Excellent. I just think, as an American who loves my country, we are about to make the same mistake we have continued to make over this last century, this past century, and it's going to happen again. We don't have the respect of the world because whatever our convictions are, whatever our beliefs are, we're always willing to trade them for party politics. And I may be cynical, but I think that's all this is about.
Horrible conclusion, if true. I hate it. And you're a school teacher, too, and I know. I hate the cynicism. I'm not saying it's yours, Joseph. You think it's merited in this situation, right?
Well, I mean, in this case, look, in Washington, there's always a lot of navel-gazing. Again, this isn't a partisan issue. Across the partisan divide, they're all too often, when the new person comes into office, they assume that the failure for reaching a diplomatic settlement, for example, is on the heads of their predecessors and on the mistaken diplomacy of their predecessors. They never credit their adversaries, and the Taliban, the Iranians, the North Koreans, the Pakistanis are all very smart and, if you will, devious adversaries. We cannot underestimate them.
Michael Rubin, fantastic. Thank you so much. We've learned a ton from you this morning. We appreciate all the time you've given us and all the knowledge and all the experience. Thanks for your courage, too.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And most of all, I think, thanks for teaching our guys before they go over there so they know what they're doing. We are blessed to have this guy. Okay, we'll be back.